So we are analyzing the stability of fixed points near four dimensions. And so the first one we are looking at is the Gaussian fixed point. So I have the R and U plane. And so the Gaussian fixed point is right here at the origin. Let me call this G, right? Put it here. So I have two directions in this plane, which correspond to eigenvectors of the linearized flow equations, right? One of the directions corresponds to R, and the corresponding eigenvalue, I called it lambda t, is positive. Is equal to 2, and then I have another direction, which is something like this, and the corresponding eigenvalue here is equal to epsilon, right? So for the case when d is greater than 4, epsilon is negative, right? So this means that if I deviate from the fixed point in this direction, which I called u tilde, the solutions just flow back into the fixed point. Okay, so this means that the fixed point is stable. Now, this direction, the r direction, is always unstable. Okay, and this just simply corresponds to the physical fact that the that r basically represents temperature. Right, so this is what we tune to be in one of the phases, ordered or disordered phase, and so deviation of t from the critical temperature will certainly take us away from the critical point. That's why this direction is unstable. So such fixed points, for which only one of the directions which corresponds to r is unstable, are called stable fixed points. Okay. So the Gaussian fixed point is stable when d is greater than 4, right? So g is stable when d is greater than 4, okay? So another important terminology is the following. So this parameter R, right, since it corresponds to an unstable direction, right, is called relevant. So R is relevant, right, meaning that if I deviate anywhere from the fixed point, R is going to grow in magnitude, right? Since the corresponding solution of the RG equations is, t of L is t of 0 e to lambda t times L. While this parameter, u tilde, is irrelevant, right? Because u tilde of L is equal to u tilde of 0 e to lambda u L, and so since lambda u tilde is negative above four dimensions, u tilde is irrelevant. Okay. Okay. So basically, this Gaussian fixed point above four dimensions simply represents the mean field critical point, right? So this describes the, just one second, this describes the ferromagnet to paramagnet order disorder transition with mean field critical exponents. Yeah. Well, so if the corresponding eigenvalue is positive, right, then it's relevant. yeah, if it's negative, then it's irrelevant. So again, so the Gaussian fixed point just corresponds to mean field critical exponents. This one caveat is that, so you remember that when we calculated the critical exponent alpha for the specific heat in mean field theory, we got zero, right? But then when we included fluctuations around mean field, we actually get a finite value, which was something like 2 to minus z over 2, right? So the Gaussian fixed point corresponds to mean field plus fluctuations, which means that you get 2 to minus z over 2 for the critical exponent. Another important point is that, so it might seem like at this Gaussian fixed point, so utility is irrelevant, which would lead you to conclude that U is irrelevant, right? The phi to the fourth term in the effective action is irrelevant, and this is almost true, but again with one caveat, right? So it's irrelevant, however, to actually obtain a finite result for the value of the order parameter, right? We need the finite U, right? Because you remember that the order parameter in the average value of the order parameter in mean field theory is equal to minus R divided by U. So if we need U, right, to obtain a physically meaningful result for the order parameter, even though formally in this renormalization group sense, U is irrelevant. So such variables are called dangerously irrelevant. So this is not irrelevant, this is dangerously irrelevant in the sense that even though it's formally irrelevant, it would be dangerous to just ignore it. Okay? Okay, so now if I go below four dimensions, so when d is less than 4, right, then epsilon is positive, and then this U tilde direction also becomes unstable for the Gaussian fixed point. Okay, so g becomes unstable. And that so basically corresponds to the fact that mean field theory fails below four dimensions. Okay. Okay. So now let's analyze in the same way the second fixed point, the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. Well, when d equals 4, it's, as I said, it's more complicated. So you have to go to higher orders to see exactly what happens. Okay, so let's go to Wilson-Fischer fixed point, and so since in this case the fixed point values of R and U tilde are non-trivial, of R and U, I'm sorry, are non-trivial, so I'll do this analysis in a more general way. Okay, so let me introduce what's called a beta function. So I'll rewrite the RG flow equations in the following formal way. So I'll call the right-hand side of the equation for R, I will call it beta sub R of R and U. And then du dl is going to be beta sub U of R and U, right? So this two-component function is called beta function, right? So explicitly in our case, I have beta R of R in U equals 2R plus U over 2 K sub D R plus lambda squared, right? And beta U of R in U is equal to epsilon U minus 3 U squared over 2 K sub D R plus lambda squared, right? And so then I can write my linearized RG equations near the fixed point in the following way. So again, I define, the values of RU at the fixed point are, yes, minus epsilon over 6 lambda squared, and U tilde is 16 pi squared divided by 3 times epsilon. So as before, I will define deviations of R and U from the fixed point and linearize in them. So U minus U tilde. And so the linearized equation I can write in terms of the beta function in the following way as D delta R DL, or let me actually write this in a matrix notation right away. So it's going to be D DL of delta R delta U. Then here I will have following matrix D beta R DR D beta R DU, oops, D beta U DR D beta U DU, and all derivatives taken at the fixed point. So at R prime, at R star and U star, and then multiplying delta R and delta U, right? Okay, so what are those derivatives? So D beta R DR is equal to 2, right? And then here I have minus so U over 2 KD R plus lambda squared, right? And if I plug in R star and U star, so to first order in epsilon, this is going to be 2 minus, and then, so if I plug in, I plug in U star here, which is proportional to epsilon, and therefore everywhere here, I can just set dimension equal to 4, right, and ignore this R. And so then I get 2 minus epsilon divided by 3, okay? Then D beta R D U, again, at the fixed point. So this is equal to K sub D divided by 2 R plus lambda squared. And so here, again, to leading order, I can actually ignore R. So this will just be lambda squared divided by 16 pi squared. So you can ask why I did not ignore epsilon here. So this epsilon over 3 will contribute, as you will see, to the critical exponents, to first order in epsilon, while a correction proportional to epsilon here would not contribute. Yeah.
Can you explain why four dimensions we can neglect R?
Well, because R star is proportional to epsilon, right? And epsilon is small. I mean, this is evaluated. So this is evaluated, of course, at the fixed point. So R star and U star, and same here. R star, U star. Okay.
So that applies to U as well, then.
Yeah, of course.
So we can ignore
yeah.
U and
yeah. No, no. So that's what I said. That you know. Here I've included this first order correction in epsilon, because we'll see later that this correction here will contribute, in fact, to first order in epsilon, while a correction to first order in epsilon here would not contribute, because basically this is on the diagonal in this matrix, while this is away from the diagonal. Okay. So basically, you know, this coefficient only determines the components of the eigenvectors. Okay, while the stuff that on diagonal determines the eigenvalues in this matrix. Okay, so then finally, d beta u dr. So d beta u dr I can just set to zero, okay, because this, as you can see, is of order epsilon squared. So this is just zero. And finally, d beta u du at r star and u star. So this is going to be epsilon, right? I want to actually include higher correction. So this is epsilon minus 3 u star, 3 u star, and then kd divided by lambda to the fourth. So since u star is proportional to epsilon, I can ignore r here, right? And if I plug everything in, this will actually be epsilon minus 2 epsilon, so minus epsilon. Okay, so this matrix then, let me call this M again. Go here. So let me call this matrix M. So explicitly, it has the following form. We have 2 minus epsilon over 3. So lambda squared divided by 16 pi squared. Then zero, and then minus epsilon. Okay. So it was epsilon here for the Gaussian fixed point, right? For the Wilson Fischer, it became minus epsilon. So the eigenvalues to first order and epsilon are just, so let me call them again, lambda t is 2 minus epsilon over 3. And then the second one, lambda u tilde, is minus epsilon. And the eigenvectors actually turn out to be exactly the same as for the Gaussian fixed point. So those two directions are identical. Okay, so v sub t is just 1, 0, while v u tilde is so minus lambda squared divided by 32 pi squared, and then 1. Okay. Okay. So now I can kind of gather all the information about both fixed points and draw the complete flow diagram. Okay, so let me draw the flow diagram for the case D less than 4, which is what we are interested in. So U and R, I have the Gaussian fixed point here at the origin. I have then the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. So it's in the negative R, half plane, and positive U. So let's say somewhere here. Right? So this vector V sub U is the vector that connects the Gaussian and the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, because it's the same for both of them, right? So I'm gonna draw this straight line that connects the Gaussian and the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. Okay. So the fact that this lambda u tilde eigenvalue is negative below 4 dimensions when epsilon is positive means that this Wilson-Fischer fixed point is stable below 4 dimensions, right? So which means that along this line, I get flows going into this point, while the Gaussian fixed point is unstable. So everything is flowing away from the Gaussian fixed point in both directions. Now, I'm not going to draw the negative U half plane because that's unphysical, right? U has to be positive for this theory to make sense, right? Okay, so then in the T or R direction, Wilson-Fischer fixed point is also unstable. Is also unstable because that direction is always unstable. Okay. And so then the flows kind of away from those lines look like something like this. So I get. Here, oops. I guess here it should flow into the away from the fixed point, and then here, yes, it's gonna like this, like that, okay. Okay, so what does this, sorry, so here I think I screwed up a little bit. It looks like that. Okay. So what does this picture mean? Okay, so first of all, if I look at points on this line which connects the Gaussian and the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, right, all of those points flow into the Wilson-Fischer fixed point under RG, right? So what this means is that so all pairs of R and U which belong to this line, right, correspond to the critical point. They describe the critical point. So all R and U on the line which is represented by this vector line correspond to the critical point. Okay? Now all points on this side of the line, right, for all those points, wherever you start, you always flow to infinite, positive infinity for R, right? So those points correspond to high temperature or disordered or paramagnetic phase. Okay, so this side represents the paramagnetic phase, while on this side of the of this line, right? And so this line is you can say is the basin of attraction of this fixed point, right? So on the left of the basin, for all points on the left of the basin of attraction, you always flow to negative infinity for R, which means zero temperature, right? So this represents the ferromagnetic phase. Okay?
Uh-huh. What about if epsilon is greater than zero?
Right. So what happens when epsilon is greater than zero? Meaning, no. So this is epsilon greater than zero. So d less than four, epsilon greater than zero. So when d is greater than four and epsilon is less than zero, then at this Wilson-Fischer fixed point, U star is negative. So that's unphysical. Basically, that means that this fixed point simply does not exist in the for the physical range for this parameter u. U star always has to be positive.
Okay?
U star is the fixed point value of u, right? Yeah, and u is the coefficient of the phi to the fourth term. You're not allowed to have negative u because, I have grad phi squared plus r over 2 phi squared plus u over 4 factorial phi to the fourth. If u is negative, right, it means that the minimum of this functional is achieved for phi either plus or minus infinity, which is unphysical. So what it means, as far as the theory is concerned, is that I have to include higher order terms, right? And so in this case, as you have seen from your homework, basically the transition becomes first order. So the fact that u is negative means that if there is a transition, it's going to be first order transition, likely. Okay. Yeah.
What is the significance that u always goes to u star in R equal?
The significance of that is that for any point on this line, right? For any pair of R and u which belong to this line. Even though, these values of R and U, there are many different values of R and U, they all actually correspond after after you've done the after you've done RG, they all actually correspond to fixed point, and that means, as we discussed, at the fixed point, the correlation length is either zero or infinite. So here it's infinite, and that means that it's a critical point. Okay, so you know, in mean field theory, critical point corresponds to just r equals zero, right? So the mean field critical point would be critical line would be this line, right? In reality, it's not. It's this one. Okay. Okay. So let's now you know, before we analyze this fixed point in more detail. So as we will see, basically the behavior of the flows near this fixed point will allow us to calculate the critical exponents. Okay, so critical exponents will in fact turn out to be related to those exponents, stability exponents near the fixed point. So, but before I go there, let me just now discuss the relevance of other terms which I've neglected here. Right. So let's now finally justify why I can restrict my action, or so I have not introduced this term before, but it's usually called actually not action in this context of critical phenomena, but Landau Ginsburg Wilson or LGW functional. So Landau and Ginsburg were the first to apply these ideas, well, in the form of mean field theory to superconductivity, right? And then Wilson actually developed this RG theory. Yeah.
What about, I mean, we're doing this only for second order phase transitions,
right?
Is there a possibility to do RG for first order phase transitions?
No, so for first order phase transitions, you know, it doesn't make sense because there is no, so, you know, all this stuff is based on the fact that at the second order phase transition, correlation length diverges, right? At the first order transition, there is no divergent correlation length, and correspondingly, there is no universality. And although it is possible to describe first order transitions in using mean field theory like this, right? But there is no universality. There is no notion of, you know, universal behavior at the first order transition. First order transition always depends on details, on microscopic details, because it's, you know, it's balancing of energy basically. And
do you think whenever I see it in the plane of the two parameters, if the RG flow flows to a finite point, that implies that I'm almost at the critical point?
Well, yes. So if you have a fixed point, which is in the physical range, meaning, you know, let's say U is positive, right? Then yeah, that implies that there is a continuous transition. If you find that sometimes that the flows, for example, that there are no fixed points, that the flows always, let's say, go to negative into the negative half plane for U. So that doesn't prove, but it suggests that the transition in this case, if it exists, is first order rather than continuous. Yeah. Well, I mean, so the fact that critical line is not r equals zero, so that just means that, you know, so in mean field theory, transition happens at r equals zero, right? So here we see that the transition always happens at negative values of r, which simply means that fluctuations, right, make it harder for the system to order. And so the transition happens at lower temperatures than would be suggested by mean field theory. Okay. And I guess, you know, the fact that the line is tilted this way, well, it just means that as U increases, you know, the magnitude of this term increases and magnitude of fluctuations basically increases. Okay. Okay, so let's now talk about the other terms. The higher order terms in phi and also higher gradients. Why are we justified in neglecting them? Well, so for example, let me consider the phi to the six terms, right? So they do arise. I mean, even if we start from such a theory with only phi squared and phi to the fourth terms, as we saw, those phi to the six terms actually do arise under RG, right? Once we integrate the fast modes, they will be phi to the six terms for slow modes. Yeah.
Do we need to imply some cutoff in negative R as well?
Cutoff, well, no. So, you know, since R can have any sign, right, it's C minus TC, there is no cutoff there. Well, it's minus TC, but, you know, it's as good as minus infinity, basically. because, you know, this expansion kind of implicitly assumes that we are close to the critical temperature. So, okay, so if I have the phi to the sixth term, let me call this V6 and an integral d dx phi to the six. Okay, so let's just call it V actually. So let's calculate the dimension of V. Right, so you remember that the leading terms in the RG flow equations are actually just given by dimension of the corresponding quantity, right? So the two and the epsilon over there are just dimensions of R and U. So therefore, if you know the dimension of V, we know what the leading term on the right hand side of the RG flow equation for U is going to be. So, okay, so we have dimension of V, right, minus D, so that's dimension of D dx, and then, so dimension of phi is D minus 2 over 2, so I have plus 6 D minus 2 over 2, so this has to be equal to 0, and I find that dimension of V is equal to 6 minus 2D. And if I rewrite this in terms of epsilon, this is going to be 2 epsilon minus 2. Okay. So for small epsilon, as long as epsilon is less than 2, right, this dimension is negative. Okay. So then I know that the RG equation for V is going to have the following form. dV dL is equal to 2 epsilon minus 2 V, right? And then plus terms of second order in epsilon, right? Plus terms of order U squared and V squared, okay? So this basically means that V direction, right, if I add V direction now in my flow diagram, this direction is going to be stable because the eigenvalue here will clearly be negative. Okay, and V is irrelevant. So if I deviate from the fixed point in the V direction a little bit, it will always flow back. Okay, so the negativity of this dimension means that V is irrelevant. irrelevant near four dimension. And in fact, it's irrelevant. It should be less than one, I guess. So it becomes marginal, what's called marginal in three dimensions, right? But in any case, this whole procedure is really justified only for small epsilon. Okay, so we should not worry about this too much. So v is irrelevant, and all the higher order terms in phi will be even more strongly irrelevant. We'll have even more negative dimensions. Yeah. Very close to. The linearized analysis, of course, is only valid near R star and U. Sure. So in principle, those equations are nonlinear, right? You can solve them completely numerically, and you will find that the No. So the diagram looks exactly like this. Yeah. So what about the higher gradients? So in particular, one type of terms which I've ignored is the following. So you remember that when I evaluated this diagram, which gave me a second order correction to U in the equation for U, right? So the expression looked like this. I had U over 4 factorial squared integral K1 K4 2 pi to the D delta K1 plus K4 phi less of K1 phi less phi less of K4, and then there was the integral of the product of two fast mode propagators, right? So I had dq 2 pi to the d 1 over r plus q squared, and then 1 over r plus q plus k1 plus K2 square, where K1 and K2 correspond to, let's say, those two slow field legs. And then I said that I'm just going to ignore this dependence on K1 and K2 because it's irrelevant, right? So let's actually show that it's indeed irrelevant, right? Okay, so if I included this dependence, so let's say what I could do is just expand in Taylor series with respect to K1 and K2, right? So in zeroth order I had, I would have a K-independent contribution, which I've included. So this would give me something like, this diagram would give me a K1 and K2 dependent correction to U, right? So therefore, I could say that, I have my U0, which is independent of K1 and K2, right? And then, let's say, there is a leading term. Let me call this U1. If I expand this in Taylor series with respect to K1 and K2, the leading order term is going to be proportional to the product of K1 and K2. Cannot depend on K1 and K2 separately because of symmetry, right? So the leading order term is going to be proportional to U1, K1 dot K2, and so on, okay? So what would this correspond to in real space, right? So I have such thing, U1, times K1 dot K2 multiplying those this product of four slow fills, right? Since each k, when transformed back to real space, corresponds to gradient, right? This k1 dot k2 corresponds to two gradients, basically, gradient squared. So the term in real space that corresponds to this kind of thing looks like this. I get u1, let's say integral d dx, and then I have grad squared, sorry, just gradient of phi squared, and then phi squared, okay? So you can easily check that if you Fourier transform this, you'll precisely get something like this, right? Okay, so in the same way, what we have to do is find the dimension of U1, right? So the dimension of U1 minus d, right? So minus so plus 2d, right? And then plus 4 times d minus 2 over 2. This has to be equal to 0. So if I solve this and write this in terms of epsilon, we're going to get epsilon minus 2. Okay, so this is in fact even more irrelevant than the phi to the sixth term, right? Yeah. Well, so okay, so what do I get when I Fourier transform this? Right, I get. So I get k1 phi of k1, k2 phi of k2, right? And then phi k3 phi k4, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this would be even higher order, right? If I have, I mean, I can also have k1 squared and k2 squared, right? So k1 squared would be the same as this one, basically would have the same dimension. It's just an example. Yeah, in principle, you can have k1 squared and k2 squared as well. Yeah, 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 no, no. So k1 squared would correspond to something like this then, grad squared phi, and then phi cubed, right? Sorry. Grad squared phi times phi cubed, that would give me k1 squared. Yeah. But yeah, this would have the same dimension. So anyway, so... so
how do we know that the operators are just irrelevant, not dangerously irrelevant?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we don't. So in this, for this particular model, when phi is scalar, then, well, it's pretty clear that V is just irrelevant. So in more complicated situations, when phi has many components, then in fact, V can be dangerously irrelevant because it can pick direction. It can help pick direction in this space. Yeah, it depends on the specific universality class, I guess. In this Ising universality class, you only need U, basically. Well, I mean, maybe I should just elaborate on this a little bit. So suppose I had instead of an order parameter that was a scalar like this phi, right? Suppose I had an order parameter which is a complex field. So it has two components, real and imaginary. And then, so a term like this, v phi to the 6, let's say, plus psi star to the 6, you know, so this term can thus influence the phase, the value of the phase of the order parameter that corresponds to the minimum. So in this sense, it's dangerously irrelevant because it does affect the actual behavior of the order parameter in the ordered phase, even though it does not affect the critical exponents. Okay. Okay. So anyway. So this is the rigorous, as rigorous as I can do, justification for ignoring all the higher order terms in this Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson functional. So all of them are irrelevant. Okay. And so as you see, basically figuring out whether something is relevant or irrelevant is pretty simple. You don't actually have to do any of those complicated calculations. In most cases, you can just look at dimensions of the corresponding quantities. Okay? Although sometimes this can doesn't quite work this way, but those cases are exotic. Okay? So in most cases, this is enough. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how it works out, basically. So if you just go through the rescaling transformation, right, after we've integrated out the... what enters into those leading coefficients here, right, is just rescaling of basically S0 of phi less. So the part that is not affected by actually integrating out the modes, the fast modes. And then you see, if you just look at this transformation, you see that this coefficient is just a dimension. Okay, so now let's see how we can actually calculate the critical exponents from this, right? So the purpose of all this is to be able to calculate the critical exponents. So let's start with the correlation length critical exponent. So let me consider correlation function. G of x, which we have already discussed in Minfield theory. So I'll write it like this. I'll pick origin as one of my points, right? And then I'll calculate the correlation of field phi x, phi at point x, with field phi at the origin. And then minus phi of x, phi of 0, phi of 0, right? So suppose we start from some point in this R and U space, right? And so the point in the R and U space corresponds to a particular Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson functional, right? Which we have not yet done RG on, let's say. So let's say we start from some point here. And we calculate a correlation function for this Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson functional, right? So G, so we start at point R and U, or equivalently T and U tilde, right? Or T and U tilde, right, which is just coordinates of this point along the eigendirections, right? So T is equivalent to R, but U tilde is slightly different from U. So then, if I calculate this correlation function, it's going to be a function of X, T and U tilde, right? Since T and U tilde specify the particular Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson functional, this function is going to be a function of those parameters, right? So I have G is a function of X, T, and U tilde. Now suppose I then do perform RG transformations on this functional for some time RG time L, right? So to do RG for time L, right? Then, so as we see from here, and you know, suppose we are not too far away from the fixed point, so I can linearize the RG equations, right? So then, T is going to change to T to lambda T times L, right? I've just integrated the linearized flow equations for time L, right? And then U tilde is going to change to U tilde times E to lambda U tilde times L, right? And also, since at every step of the RG transformation, we rescale momenta, right? And therefore also lengths, X is going to get rescaled by X divided by B, where B is equal to E to the L, right? This is not the B that's infinitesimally close to one. It's not E to DL, it's the full scale factor B. Also, at every step of RG, we are rescaling phis, right? So in momentum space, I'm rescaling, I'm saying that phi prime, you remember, of k prime, is equal to, so b to minus d plus 2 minus eta divided by 2 of phi less of k, right? This is the momentum before rescaling. This is momentum after rescaling. So in real space, what this would translate to. So in real space, I have phi prime of x prime, which is integral d dk prime 2 pi to the d phi prime of k prime e to I k prime dot x prime, right, which is equal to, so integral d dk, so since k prime is equal to k times b, right, then I have d dk 2 pi to the d b to the d, right, phi prime is b to minus d plus 2 minus eta over 2, phi less of k, and then, you know, this is the same as k dot x because the k and x are rescaled in the opposite way, right? So this is e to I k dot x. So this is then the rescaling factor in real space, right? So then I have, so this is just equal to, so b to d minus 2 plus eta over 2, right, times phi less of x, okay? So therefore, at every step of the RG transformation, the fields phi are rescaled by this factor, right? So then, so this means that phi in the end gets rescaled by this b now to d minus 2 plus eta over 2. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, phi less is I mean, phi less is the same as phi in the sense that, you know, we are calculating this correlation function at long distances, right? We are interested in this correlation function, how it behaves at long distances, right? So in this sense, you know, phi greater does not really contribute to this correlation function, okay? So if we combine all of this, then I can write down the following functional relation, okay? For the correlation function. You know, since, RG transformation simply corresponds to, transforming Landau functional for the same system, right? We are just integrating out fast modes, but, so Landau functional after RG still describes the same system, right? Then I can write the following equation for G. So G evaluated at the end of my RG time. So for X divided by B, then T e to lambda T times L u tilde e to lambda u tilde times L. This has to be equal to g of x, t, and u tilde, right? G at distance x, t, and u tilde, so g evaluated before I started RG, up to the this rescaling factor of the phi fields, right? Times b d minus 2 plus eta, right? Or, so if I invert this, then I'll get g of x, t, and u tilde is equal to b minus d plus 2 minus eta, g of x divided by b, T e to lambda t times L, u tilde e to lambda u tilde times L, okay? Okay, so now let me assume that my starting point is the fixed point where t and u tilde are equal to zero. Suppose we start at exactly at the fixed point. So t is equal to u tilde is equal to zero. Right? So, yeah, so u tilde here, u tilde here is going to represent the deviation from the fixed point, okay? I'm just measuring it from the fixed point. So then I get g of x 0 and 0, right? No, I'm assuming here that I've linearized my RG equations near a stable fixed point, right? Wilson Fisher in this case. So g of x 0 and 0 is going to be equal to b to minus d plus 2 minus eta g of x over b. And here, since this is a fixed point, those values did not change, right? So this is 0 and 0 again, right? So from this, it's clear that this function, right? So this is a functional equation. And what this means is that this function is scale invariant, right? So what this means then is that g of x 0 and 0 must be proportional to 1 over x to d plus 2 minus eta. Okay? Yeah. This is d. It's a mistake here. So d minus 2 plus 8. Yeah. Thank you. Right? Okay, so this is exactly the form that we found, right, in Minfield theory, except for this exponent eta, right? And so this is why eta is called anomalous dimension, right? Because it enters here in the the fact that g at the fixed point, at the critical point, should behave as 1 divided by x to d minus 2. This can be just found from dimensional analysis, basically, right? But so in fact, the non-trivial thing is that it can get this anomalous dimension here, which, well, in our case, to first order an epsilon, it's actually 0. What I want to find now is actually the correlationless critical exponent, right? So to find that, I have to move away from the fixed point in t direction, right? So let's move away from fixed point in the t direction. So then what do I get? I get g. Of x, t, and 0, so u tilde is still 0, equals b minus d minus 2 plus eta g of x divided by b t. And let me write this in the following way. So this e to the l is just b. So I can write this as b to lambda t. And then this thing is still 0. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here, when you take t and u tilde equals 0, we're assuming we're at the critical point, right? Because that equation at the end has another solution.
We are assuming that we are at the fixed point, right? Okay. At the fixed point. We start at the fixed point because, you know, critical point just corresponds to this whole line in the R. Yeah.
So from this equation at the end, either g scales like this or g equals 0.
Right? We are looking for, I guess, the most general non-trivial solution for G.
Consistent with what we said as the correlation function is either infinite or zero.
Well, no, I mean, correlation length is either infinite or zero. Correlation function, you know, then it should be a delta function, I guess. It's not, you know, if correlation length is zero, then, so in continuum limit, correlation function should become something like delta function. It's not really zero. But yeah, it's true that this equation is satisfied by just G equals identically zero, but I guess, well, we are looking for a non-trivial G. So this equation, right, so this is just a functional equation for G again, and it has to be satisfied for any B, right? I can integrate my RG equation for any length of RG time, right? And so then I have a freedom of choosing what G is. So let me choose then B to be equal to X, okay? In some, in principle, X has dimensions, right? And B is dimensionless, I guess I can say that B is equal to X divided by the microscopic length, which is the, you know, the lattice constant. But let me just ignore that fact. It's not important. So then, what do I get? I get G of X, T, and 0 is equal to B minus, so I can replace here B by X, X minus D minus 2 plus eta, and that's this piece here, right? So this is the behavior of G exactly at the critical point, exactly at the critical point. And then I have G of 1, T, X, 2, lambda T, and 0. Right, and so this is the prefactor of the scale invariant part that should depend on the correlation lengths. Right, so we expect that this should be some function f of x divided by the correlation lengths. Right, because the correlation lengths is the only relevant length scale near critical point. So then, from here, what I get is that the correlation lengths should behave as T to minus 1 divided by lambda T, right? If that's the case, then this thing will be of this form, x divided by psi to some power.
Can you repeat that? You're moving along the t direction.
Right, so that corresponds to changing temperature, I guess. So I'm.
So when do you multiply by b to the lambda t? So b e to the lambda t?
Yeah, but b is just equal to e to the l. Yeah, b is equal to e to the l. And then I choose my l so that b is equal to x. Okay? So again, so for this combination to have this form, x divided by psi, right? Psi has to behave in this way. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not okay. So it's not obvious, but I mean, this is pretty much the underlying assumption in all the stuff that we are doing, right? And I guess so. The fact that the fact that, let's say, only leading gradients of phi are relevant, that kind of implies that only long length scales are relevant. Okay, so then our result then for the correlation length critical exponent nu, so nu is just equal to 1 divided by lambda t, so 1 divided by the eigenvalue of this of the RG equations linearized near the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. So that's our correlation length critical exponent. So this eigenvalue is equal to 2 minus epsilon divided by 3. Okay. And so to be consistent, I have to expand this to first order in epsilon. So this is approximately equal to 1/2, which is the mean field correlation length critical exponent. Right? And then plus, so epsilon divided by 12. Okay. So if I am bold and I just substitute 1 here for epsilon and compare with known numerical results for critical exponents for three-dimensional Ising model, then so let me erase this. So let me take epsilon equals 1. So this would be our approximation for the 3D Ising correlation length exponent, right? So then here I get psi. So this is 1/2 plus 1/12, and this is approximately 0.58. Right? And then, so the exact result, which is known from numerics, is 0.63. Okay? So it's not too bad. This even first order in epsilon gives a fairly good approximation to exact. This exact 8 nu, of course. Yeah. Numerically, let's say numerically, if you simulate, if you do Monte Carlo simulation of three-dimensional Ising model, right? Yeah. Yeah. Good question. I don't know. Sometimes they do. I think sometimes they don't. I don't know what happens exactly at this order. Okay. So I think if you go to high enough orders, let's say to order 6. Then that does move you closer to the exact value. But what happens if you go, let's say, to next order in epsilon, to epsilon squared? Yeah, I don't know. It may move you away, actually.
But when they do it numerically, do you just go to higher order in epsilon, or do you go to higher order?
No. Numerically, you can just simulate Ising model, right? Just do Monte Carlo. Yeah, just do Monte Carlo simulation of the Ising model and then find the critical exponents. To actually carry out those high order RG calculations. That's also done, well, not entirely numerically, it's done usually in Mathematica. So you get the exact result in the end, but the I guess the enumeration of all the diagrams is done kind of with the help of computer. Okay, so so in a similar way we can find other critical exponents. So let's calculate, for example, the susceptibility critical exponent. So which means okay, so I will add a field to my Landau functional, Landau-Ginzburg-Wilson functional. So 1/2 grad phi squared plus r over 2 phi, phi squared plus u over 4 factorial phi to the fourth, and then minus b phi, where b can be x dependent. Okay, so then as you remember, so we did this in mean field theory, I can calculate the correlation function g of x minus x prime in the following way, right? As d phi of x, since phi of x is a continuous field, I'm just writing this as a variation of phi of expectation value of phi of x with respect to b of x prime, right? That's the other way to kind of look at what the correlation function is, right? It's a response of field at point x to a response of the order parameter at point x to a field, external field applied to at point x prime, right? And so this is equal to explicitly, so this is dB of x prime, right, 1 over z. I'll just say that this is the same as phi of x, phi of 0, minus phi of x, phi of x prime, minus phi of x average, phi of x prime average, right? On the other hand, if I want to calculate uniform susceptibility, chi, right? In this case, what I'm doing is I'm applying a uniform field that's independent of x, right? And calculating, again, the response of the order parameter with respect to that uniform field that's applied uniformly across the whole system. So d phi dB taken at b equals 0, right? And so explicitly, this is going to be equal to d dB at b equals 0 of 1 over z integral d phi of x e to minus s of phi, right? This is just the 1 over z times this integral is the definition of average of phi of x. So, and then you see that, so when I take this derivative, right, what derivative does is it pulls phi, it pulls an integral of phi over some over x, right? So therefore, this uniform susceptibility is just given by integral of the correlation function over x, right? So it's equal to integral over x of g of x, right? And then I will plug in this form for g. So it's going to be integral over x x to minus d minus 2 plus eta times some function f capital of x divided by xi, right? So let me now change integration variables in this integral to a dimensionless variable x divided by xi, right? So let me say that y is equal to x divided by xi. Then I have chi equals psi to the d, right? Integral dy. Then I have psi to so minus d minus 2 plus eta, and then y to minus d minus 2 plus eta times f of y. And now this integral does not depend on psi anymore, right? So therefore, I find that my susceptibility goes as correlation lengths to 2 minus eta, right? And therefore, it goes as t to minus nu, right, times 2 minus eta. So therefore, the susceptibility critical exponent is actually related to correlation lengths exponent by this exact relation. Okay. So I have gamma equals nu times 2 minus eta. So to first order an epsilon, then it's just twice eta. And so I have 1, then plus epsilon over 6. Okay. So 1 is the mean field result, and epsilon over 6 is the leading correction. So again, if we extrapolate to epsilon equals 1, I'll just substitute epsilon equals 1, I get gamma approximately equal to 1.17. And the exact result, gamma, is approximately equal to 1.24. So again, in this case, even first order and epsilon gives a pretty good approximation to the exact critical exponent. Okay. In exactly the same way, we can find all the other critical exponents. So the order parameter critical exponent to first order and epsilon is 1/2 minus epsilon over 6. So this actually is probably the best approximation to the exact result. So here we get 0.33, while the exact result is pretty much the same, 0.325. Okay. So the result for alpha is epsilon over 6. Okay, so alpha is 0 in mean field theory, right? And it's epsilon over 6 here. So we get 0.17. And the exact result is 0.11. So again, quite a good approximation. Okay. And well, so you know, this the 4 minus epsilon expansion can be so I've done these calculations explicitly for the Ising universality class, right? Assuming that the order parameter is scalar, this can be extended easily to any kind of order parameter, right? If order parameter has many components, these calculations can be easily done in exactly the same way, and so well, your next homework is going to be precisely on generalizing this to an order parameter with many components. And so as you see, in some cases, it's not always true, but in some cases, like this 3D Ising universality class, it gives pretty good approximation to exact results. Okay, so it's valuable tool for calculating critical exponents. But so even more generally, you know, RG, you know, gives us kind of this rigorous justification for you know, for trying to model complicated microscopic systems by simple theories, right? So what you've done here is you've started from something that was specific and microscopic, right? And derived a theory for derived a theory that was general and which did not depend on microscopic detail, but rather on some general properties like symmetry, right? So you know, in this sense, RG just provides some kind of conceptual framework for modeling complicated condensed matter systems, right? So for example, you know, if you take a metal, if you try to model a metal starting from microscopics, it's a horribly complicated problem because you'd have to take into account, you know, all the atoms, their exact arrangement in the crystal lattice, interaction of the atoms with themselves, all of the electrons in each atom, their interactions with themselves again, and it would be just completely intractable problem. However, as we know, you know, many metals can be described by many properties of metals can be described by a very simple model where basically electrons are just assumed to be free, right? And so the kind of the rigorous justification for that, for why this works, is precisely RG. Right? So all of those complicated microscopic details are irrelevant for describing low energy, long wavelengths properties of metals. Okay, and so it's this kind of conceptual thing that's probably most valuable about RG. Right? It's much more general in this case than just a tool for calculating critical exponents. Yeah.
Two things. One, we didn't consider the case in which you move along the U theta direction, right?
Right.
Should that add any other functional property for your correlation function?
Well, I mean, if I move, so U tilde direction is a stable direction, right? So if I deviate along U tilde, nothing is going to happen. I'll just flow back to the fixed point.
Okay. And the other thing, how do you calculate alpha and beta from here?
Well, I mean, I can do this calculation next time. It's just there is no time now, but I can do the calculation of beta and alpha on Monday, if you like. But it's exactly the same idea as this calculation. Okay. Okay. So see you on Monday. Okay.